I'm Dave Jackson, cryptocurrency and blockchain editorial writer here at Stockhouse.com. This is episode 3 in our series of Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcasts. And our mission going forward is to help listeners and investors navigate the sometimes murky waters of blockchain technology and digital currency. Today, we're very excited to be joined by one of the industry's most respected and experienced names, Samson Mao, Chief Strategy Officer with Blockstream, a leading worldwide provider of blockchain technology systems. Mr. Mao is a well-known contributor within the Bitcoin community, advocating for the importance of decentralization and the need to prioritize security and protocol development. Prior to joining Blockstream, he was the Chief Operating Officer of BTC China, one of the largest digital currency exchanges and mining pools in the world. Thanks for joining us, Samson.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
All right. Well, can you give us a brief background bio of yourself and how you initially became interested in blockchain technology?
Sure. So I'm originally from the game industry and was working in RTS games, real-time strategy games like Company of Heroes and Dawn of War. And later I joined Ubisoft as a director of production. So it's probably while I was at Ubisoft that I first heard about Bitcoin. I was working on the Might and Magic series online game, and also the Smurfs social game on Facebook. So I was operating these games with massive economies centered around in-game currencies and resources, and I learned about Bitcoin, which seemed very novel to me at the time because you had this digital currency that was independent of any particular company. You know, it didn't require anyone to control it or manage it, and that was a first for me because with a game, you know, you have a digital currency, but the game operator or game company actually can control the supply, adjust the economics as needed and at will. So that was very different. I tried to mine some Bitcoin at the time, but I didn't get that far. But eventually I got into the Bitcoin industry because I knew Bobby Lee at BTCC, BTC China. I joined up as an advisor initially, and after a few months, I was brought in as COO to manage the exchange and mining business units.
That's good. Thank you very much for that little bio. Blockchain, Bitcoin, or crypto mining are terms that are now becoming part of the mainstream tech lexicon. What is it and what's really driving the hype?
Well, I think it's quite multifaceted. I think definitely price rise has drawn a lot of interest. People see the price rising a few hundred percent a year and there's a bit of FOMO. They want to get in. I think that's probably a big factor. There's a saying that people come for the get rich quick scheme and stay for the sound money. And I think there's some truth in that. You know, people are drawn in initially by, okay, this thing is hot. And then eventually they delve into it a bit, do some research and understand that this is actually something quite revolutionary. But overall, I think it's media coverage and the draw of there being this new frontier, this area that people can get in and, you know, reap some benefits of this being an early adopter. And I think mining as well, it's mining is kind of like a gold rush. People look at that as a way to get some Bitcoin for cheap.
Gotcha. Now, despite the initial resistance, many traditional commercial and investment banks like RBC, Citi, JP Morgan Chase, they're investing in blockchain technology. So why now? And where do you foresee the mainstream investment community going with blockchain?
Well, I think a lot of companies just want a foothold in the space. It's kind of like people getting involved in Bitcoin, except for blockchain is what, you know, the bigger companies get into. They see the news and there's a lot of people evangelizing the technology as a solution to every problem. And then I think the R&D units in these companies want to be, you know, involved. They want to be relevant and they try to spin up some R&D arm, right? I think Facebook is the latest one to start like a blockchain research lab or something like that. But to me, it's similar to big data in 2005. You know, there's this massive rush of interest in big data and everyone's saying you need big data. You have to be collecting big data. You have to be in big data. But it doesn't really make that much of a difference. You know, you have to process and analyze and actually do something with the data. A lot of people are probably investing in blockchain technology without also understanding why you need a blockchain. You know, it's understandable because some stocks that, you know, put blockchain in their name go up 4 times, right? So you can't really blame them. But private blockchains are a big thing, and a lot of people working on their own, own private blockchains, they kind of miss the point of having a blockchain. So if you have a decentralized blockchain that's publicly accessible, you allow people to validate information, verify information, that's probably why you want a blockchain in the first place. But let's say you're a bank and you want to implement your own private blockchain, you're just telling your customers to trust you still. If they can't validate, then it's no better than the current model. So nothing really changes.
Gotcha.
I think these companies will keep investing in blockchain technology, and they'll roll out some proof of concepts. But ultimately, I think eventually they will come to the realization that it's not that different than status quo.
Right. Now, you've been with Blockstream for a relatively short time. What drove you to make the move to the company in the first place?
Well, it's been a year now. Time flies when you're having fun, right?
Yeah.
So
no doubt.
When I was at BTC China, that's when we first started working with Blockstream. They were rolling out the Liquid Network. It's an inter-exchange settlement network, so they reached out to us, and it sounded very promising. The technology allowing for fast settlement between exchanges and letting traders take advantage of arbitrage opportunities, that's pretty interesting for us as an exchange. I also noticed that Blockstream was contributing a lot to protocol development and the technology. And they're basically, shoring things up and moving things along a lot. So I decided that, I'd make the jump over and see how I could help Blockstream and help them to contribute to advancing the state of blockchain technology and Bitcoin.
Great. Now, companies like Blockstream, they're taking the lead in developing blockchain for Bitcoin Core. What are the other possible long-term tech-based and business applications here?
Well, Blockstream is one of many companies that contribute to the Bitcoin protocol and to the Bitcoin Core client. There's also Chaincode Labs. They're based out of New York, and they actually have more people contributing than us, but still a lot of people think that we're taking the lead, which is actually not true anymore. We also have MIT DCI. They do a lot of work too and contribute a great deal of code. So we're really just one of many contributors, and I think credit should be given where credit is due. In terms of long-term tech, I think a lot of people are excited about building things on top of the Bitcoin protocol. And going back to your previous question, that's probably why Blockstream was exciting for me. We invest a lot in R&D. We invested in Lightning, the Lightning protocol, very early on, actually like in 2015, when people were not even interested in it, right? So we're a very forward-looking company, and I think we've paved the way for a lot of exciting things to happen. We also have a project called Blockstream Satellite, and that's launching geosynchronous satellites into orbit that are actually leasing commercial space on geosynchronous satellites that broadcast the Bitcoin blockchain around the world. So now, if you're in some remote area and the internet is bad, you can still download the whole blockchain for free. And, the next step for us is to make it a two-way channel so that you can also send transactions out through the satellite. But, that's a lot of the stuff that Blockstream is doing is at the infrastructure level, layer two or general infrastructure like Blockstream Satellite, so that Bitcoin can power this new global financial ecosystem. We're kind of building that redundancy there. So, if an undersea cable is cut, you can still get a satellite feed for the blockchain. We also have the Liquid Network. That's something that's built on top of Bitcoin. It's a layer two protocol. It allows exchanges and financial institutions to settle on a parallel blockchain or sidechain, if you will, which is pegged to Bitcoin. So basically you have 21 million Bitcoin, you have 21 million Bitcoin in Liquid as well. So you lock up Bitcoin on the main chain to unlock in Liquid. And inside Liquid, the rule set is a bit different. So we have bigger blocks, we have faster block times, and you can essentially move stuff very quickly and settle between different exchanges and institutions. So overall, I'll say we're laying the framework for making Bitcoin and digital currencies into a foundation of a global financial system.
Very cool. You just recently returned from Deconomy, the 2018 conference in Seoul, South Korea. It was the first ever blockchain forum of its kind. Can you share with our listeners some of the highlights and takeaways from the conference?
Yeah, I think Deconomy was quite ICO-centric. There were a lot of people there to talk about their projects and network and raise money. And I think that was the bulk of the conference, actually. And there was some drama at the conference, too, as you might have seen.
Yes. Now, getting into the dramatic side of things, there was a bit of a sensation that developed after your lively panel discussion regarding Bitcoin scalability with the man they call the Bitcoin Jesus, Roger Ver. I guess the word discussion would be putting it mildly.
Yeah, I don't think anyone calls him that anymore. But yeah, that we had a panel discussion. There were supposed to be more people, but it ended up just being Roger and myself. So a lot of people thought it was arranged that way, but actually, we were supposed to have like a broader discussion. But yeah, that the highlight of that probably was at the end of that panel where Vitalik called out Fiktoshi or Craig Wright for being a fraud. That got a lot of attention.
Now, did the argument eventually just boil down to Bitcoin Core versus Bitcoin Cash?
Yeah, unfortunately, that was what the panel discussion boiled down to. We had tried to talk beforehand and see if we could keep it civil and just talk about the technology. But ultimately, I think it degenerated into Roger going off into one of his sermons. And I can tell you firsthand, it's hard to really discuss things with Roger. And I try not to engage him too much because you can't really debate someone's feelings and emotions, right?
Correct.
It was, you know, he got into his preaching about, you know, Bcash is the true vision, and it's hard to really discuss that or get into it. Also, the audience is Korean. You don't know how much background they have on the scaling debate. So I just try to keep it technical, simple, and straightforward.
Yeah, he gets a little bit perturbed when you use the word Bcash, as I've noticed.
Yes, he does.
So let's segue into the question that a lot of people are asking right now: can Bitcoin itself scale? It's an antagonistic argument. I understand that, but in the blockchain and crypto community, it's something organic and it's happening out there right now. Can you explain what scalability is and why it's so contentious?
Okay, so you know, scaling is kind of it's been an ongoing hot topic for years now, and I think it's a bit of a red herring. The question is really, can blockchain technology scale? And there are ways to scale it, but you know, if you only want to increase throughput and get more transactions, then it's kind of a dead end. You have to look at layer two scaling solutions. And I think throughput is really conflated with scalability a lot. You know, people like to hound on Bitcoin and say it only has 7 transactions a second and that needs to increase for it to scale. But I think the more important thing to look at is, you know, the amount of value that can be transacted per second. And if you do the math and you look at how much value is being moved through Bitcoin, it's like tens of thousands of dollars per second versus other coins. There may be 1,000 a second, or some are even less, right? The real thing you need to look at is value, because if you're trying to compete with a payment system, then no blockchain-based cryptocurrency is going to be able to keep up. You know, a centralized system can do tens of thousands of transactions a second, like Visa or MasterCard. We probably do more than that, but there is this trade-off, right? If we centralize Bitcoin by making the blocks massive, yes, we could run it in a data center. Yes, we can run fiber lines between the data centers. You know, we can have massive hardware to validate the blocks, but that really defeats the purpose, right? No ordinary person would be able to validate their own transactions, and you're back to square one. So you're back to where you're an individual, you can't validate. It's like looking at your bank account, seeing a number, and you have no idea if it's accurate, if they have the money or anything else. But ultimately, the scaling debate comes down to comp sci and people that don't seem to understand computer science, right? A lot of people are chiming in on the debate and just voicing their opinion. It's like bike shedding, where, you know, if a town has to decide, should we build a bike shed or should we build a nuclear power plant, they can decide pretty quickly if they want to build a nuclear plant, but then the bike shed can go on for weeks because people have different opinions on the color, size, you know, how many doors does it have, and things like that. But it's the same for scaling. Everyone has an opinion of the right block size, but they miss the key thing, which is, we can't really change a consensus rule arbitrarily, no matter how many companies decide that they think it should be changed to whatever size they think it should be changed.
Okay, now let's move over to decentralization. It's the driving force and philosophy behind the blockchain, and it's what you and Blockstream are really all about. So can you explain to our audience the concept in layman's terms about decentralization and how it really affects everything throughout the blockchain process?
Yeah, so I think decentralization is keeping it so that the blockchain is not controlled by any one party. But decentralization ultimately is just one aspect, I think, of why you want a blockchain, right? It's the bigger thing is that it is immutable. And I think for Blockstream itself, it's we're more about rethinking trust or removing trust from the equation, removing the need for someone to trust a centralized system. With Bitcoin, you have a digital bearer asset, right? You can, if you have it in your hand, you can transact it, you can move it, you can store it however you like, and there's no need to trust anyone else. I think what we're trying to do is bring that to other areas, other financial systems, and kind of change how business is done.
Now, does Bitcoin disrupt decentralization by creating its alleged intentions to monopolize cryptocurrency?
So do you mean is Bitcoin trying to dominate all the other cryptocurrencies?
Well, that's the perception in the community, especially in, with people who are trading various digital currencies. So where do you perceive where, in fact, digital currencies stock up in terms of where Bitcoin positions itself as the giant elephant in the room, so to speak?
So I think Bitcoin is the first, right? And I heard this from Matthew Haywood, but I don't know if anyone else said it, but Bitcoin had an immaculate conception, right? Before Bitcoin, there was no decentralized digital currency, right? It's the first one. And there always will be copies, right? If you look at it from the perspective of people and human nature, if there's a way to make a quick buck, someone will find a way to make a quick buck. And a lot of that is to create altcoins or fork coins and try to leech off the Bitcoin brand, by calling your coin something, Bitcoin something. So Bitcoin is the first, and it has the first mover advantage. It has that network effect. It also is the most secure currency, most secure digital currency. It has the most developers behind it. If you look at commits to GitHub, you just can't compare with other ones. Bitcoin has hundreds of developers, tons of commits going in versus some other coins that have maybe like one or two commits a month, right? It's just a different world. And I don't think it's necessarily that Bitcoin is trying to dominate everything. It's just by Bitcoin's nature, it will dominate everything. Everything flows to Bitcoin in the end. Like when people look at altcoin or they do a token sale, they're moving, they're getting people's money, but they're probably keeping Bitcoin for themselves. And I don't think, having a lot of cryptocurrencies doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? A lot of them are just cheap copies and knockoffs. Like if you look at fork coins like Bcash, why does it really have value? It has value because, Bitmain is accepting it as a payment for a miner. So it's essentially pegged to a Bitcoin miner, right? It's like the petrodollar. But if you take that away, does it really have intrinsic value? Is it really a store of value? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah. Well, finally, Samson, how do you see blockchain and to a lesser extent, cryptocurrency changing the world as we know it?
I think the biggest impact, the best impact that blockchain technology and Bitcoin can have on the world is to bring back sound money. So it's going back to an asset that has value versus fiat currency that can be printed out of thin air. You have a fixed supply of Bitcoin. It's easy to verify. You can you can't measure the supply of gold or fiat in circulation. It's hard to keep track of how much currency is being printed on any given day in any given country. But with Bitcoin, we have this thing which is essentially a measuring stick, 21 million Bitcoins, or more if you denominate it in bits. But it is a finite amount, and you can't change it. You can't inflate it, you can't duplicate it, unless you make a fork coin, which goes back to your previous question, why do these other coins have value? But what Bitcoin allows us to do is to build a new financial system that's less prone to corruption. And I think that will bring about far more prosperity to the world, because now you have sound money again. If you look at the gold standard, the period of time when when current fiat currencies were pegged to gold, that was a very prosperous time for the world and for a lot of people in the world. But as we lost that peg to gold, you see just fiat currencies having massive devaluations, a loss of purchasing power. And for certain countries like Venezuela, you see the very extreme effects where the value of that fiat currency effectively goes to zero. So I think Bitcoin will make the world a more prosperous place by ultimately empowering the people.
Well, listen, I think what you've been able to explain to our audience clarifies a lot of the issues that there were. Extremely happy that you had a chance to join us today on our Stockhouse Blockchain Cryptocurrency 101 podcast. Once again, we'd like to thank Samson Mao for joining us. Very informative and entertaining discussion, sir. Thank you again, and have a
Thanks,
great
Dave.
Day.
Take care.